Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to Style Over Substance with me, Scarlett,
and myself, Mim.
Today we are doing an episode talking to Mim about why she left fashion. If you're interested, I've already done my soapbox.
It was a good one. It was a really in-depth chat about
I felt
life.
Like a therapy session, it really
It was like your documentary.
It is going to be in my memoir, so it's a sneak peek. But your story is really different from mine, so I think this will be, it's not going to be some sort of copycat story.
No.
So I guess to get right into it, what are the different areas, for people who don't know, that you worked in first? And then we can kind of go into further bits.
Yeah, so your story particularly was about your like ascension into fashion design in particular. My career in fashion was far more like higgledy-piggledy. But on the same time, I think where you were heading was like more aspirational. And where I was in fashion was more of like a typical story for a lot of people. So, for example, I started in retail on the shop floor. And what started off as just like having a job, needing a job, and then like, oh, well, I've always liked fashion, so let me see if I can use this work experience and skills that I have into like a better role and then try and move my way up.
Into not even the back room, but like off the shop floor and into the office.
Yeah, so exactly. Like I obviously would talk more in depth about it, but at certain points in my career, it was like, okay, I'm done with shop floor.
Yeah,
I need to go into the to the office, and I wanted like be more administrative, and. Then I ended up in like inventory management, which sits in merchandising.
Yeah.
It was a massive learning curve. And I didn't, you know, at the beginning of when I started working in fashion, I didn't know that I was going to end up where I was. And also me no longer being in fashion was not something I planned or I made a decision. You know, the way things turned out. So it was really unpredictable, you could say.
Yeah. So like your career, I wouldn't say it's circumstantial, but it also has been like you assessing in certain times, like you said, and it not being like a straight timeline, a pre-planned timeline.
Yeah.
And so what was your experience, like pros, cons of the shop floor?
So I started on the shop floor. Well, like my first job was like back in the day when I was 16, and that was like River Island, Windsor High Street.
I remember that. I used to go see you working.
Oh my God. And I worked in the men's department upstairs. And that was just like, you know, that's just like any job. But then I think when I left uni, because I studied modern languages. I did Spanish and Portuguese, so it was nothing to do with fashion. And I used to spend a lot of time in Spain, and I managed to get a job working at Agent Provocateur on the shop floor in Spain. They had a Spanish shop, and it was like, this was like the best scenario for me because I got to spend all summer in Spain getting paid, living out there. And for those who may or may not know, Agent Provocateur is definitely like a girl gang, you know, like when you work with these other women in, I think it's a really unique experience, if I'm honest, that you work with these other women who are really passionate about the product. The brand has a really strong aesthetic And the types of women who are drawn to this brand, who end up working for it, they're very like, you know, I met a lot of really confident, charismatic, not shy women. And I genuinely think that that shaped me to an extent as an adult later on.
And also in an area where people are quite nervous about, like, lingerie, sexuality, all of that stuff, to actually be women who are like talking in a really confident way and trying to sell that also to other people and maybe hear some really uncomfortable things is actually like really beneficial to not being shy about certain things.
Definitely. And like, not, as you said, not only was I selling to women, some of them who are very confident, some of them who are not so much, but we had a lot of men that we'd have to sell to. And so I walked away from that job with a lot of stories, a lot of funny moments. It was a real experience. So that was like my, I think that was a pivotal moment.
That was the start, wasn't it?
Yeah. After that, I was living in London and I had this job for a really short period of time and I hated it and I left and I was like, fuck this job, I need to find something else. But I had like rent, so I needed another job, and retail is that sort of role where you can always find a retail job and bounce back into it. So I worked in like other stores in central London, Oxford Circus, all of that, worst place to work. I hate it so much. But it's like the shopping capital of the UK. And then finally, I started working like, I was at Harvey Nichols for a time, and then moving into Selfridges back in lingerie for some time. And that, again, it was like, when I got to that point, it was like, I really want to get off the shop floor now. Like, I don't see my life doing this. Like, I need to progress. Like, we both came from, like, we're not stupid people.
Yeah.
You know, we have, like, some sort of brains.
But we also have aspirate, like, not only are we, like, relatively intelligent young women. You're saying young. but we also have aspirations.
Yeah.
And it's fine if you do just want to be staying at that, like, at that level. But that's not the kind of thing that we have aspirations for.
Yeah, of course. And also, like, to be honest, retail is really poorly paid.
Yeah.
Even if
and it's grueling work, like you really earn your money and you're not earning that much.
You're on your feet all day.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind, like, as I was saying, like when I worked at AP, there was a really strict
uniform
and you wore heels all day for 8 hours. In retail, like, you don't get paid for like your lunch break, or you get paid for half of it. You are working shift patterns. So department stores in London, especially in the summer where they have a lot of Middle Eastern clientele, that's like their busiest part of the year, department stores will open an hour later to accommodate for that section of their clientele who come in
for private shopping.
They come in for private shopping and they come in late because in their culture, in their country, it's like boiling hot during the day. So they'd rather relax and do shopping when it's cooler in the evening and things. So like, to be out spending money at like 9-10 o'clock is culturally normal for them. So department stores cater to that, and you end up working like from 2 till 10, and then you get on a train. And at that time, I was not living, well, half of it I was living in London and half of it I wasn't. And similar to your story, making that commute in and out of London at really late hours of the day, like getting home at midnight.
It's not nice.
Yeah, it was terrible. So I was like, okay, I need to move on from this. And so that was the last, being in the department store for like selling luxury brands. And that's another thing. Like, even though, you know, at the time you're thinking, let me move on to a better brand or something, even though the hours will be the same, I have a chance to make more money through like commission. For all of those who have worked in retail, like, commission is really, it's a massive factor in like how much you get paid. And each brand has a different commission structure. So you know, when you're in the department store and you see like the concessions like Chanel and Dior and you're like, or like Van Cleef, and you're like, oh my God, I wonder how much they're taking, you know? I used to live in a flat with one of my housemates. She worked for Van Cleef and Arpels, selling jewellery, obviously. And I remember at the time when she told me how much she made, thinking that was like a lot of money, you know? When really it was probably a normal amount of money. Yeah. But it really doesn't matter like what brand you work for. When you're a sales associate, you're a sales associate. And so I think I got tired and felt like I needed to move on.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to touch on, which I'm assuming, but I also kind of think is true, is that when you're working sort of for more luxury brands and also in this, like you literally aren't just there on a till. You get to experience a lot more, like River Island compared to like being working at AP.
Yeah.
You learn a bit more about the whole process, probably a bit more of like stock levels and all, like you probably are starting to learn a bit more about that side of the business, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. You're right in that. It, because you are encouraged to understand your clients more. Yeah. And it's not just for AP, it's for other brands that I've worked for as well.
It's when, as soon as like it becomes a bit more luxury, like the experience, and they want to, and that's the difference. And also that's why you want to work, I guess, in more luxury, like customer, like on the floor, because they're paying you to go that a little bit extra mile and all of that stuff and know your products better. Like, you go shopping in River Island, like, have you got stock of this? I'll check the back room.
Yeah.
Whereas like you might be like, oh no, but this store in like this section does, but if you like this, you may also like that. Like,
yeah,
that level of service is expected. But
like, it's definitely true. Like, you get to upskill a little bit more, and you get the chance to like fill out your CV a bit more. So you're right in that, because you're encouraged to know your product to a deeper level and a greater understanding. So like, we were taught about different types of lace, different types of fabrics, construction of things, the names for different types of garments. That was something that you could put on your CV as something that you're skilled in, as well as like clienteling, having like your black book, which a lot of brands call it, of who are your clients that come back to see you and you have good relationships with. And you can kind of take that experience into more other types of sales or marketing or whatever it might be. Like, there were opportunities where you could say, okay, I've done this a little bit, can I use this for a better job moving forward? But I think you have to be, obviously I haven't worked in retail in a while, I think you have to be quite strategic when you're in those scenarios or in those job roles. If you know you don't want to stay there, you have to think about, what am I doing now that I can make sound really good, or make it sound like I have a lot to offer in a different sort of role?
But those are transferable skills that, like, I feel like you might think it's random, but that also does feel like a really natural progression into kind of going into the office and dealing with inventory and all of that stuff somewhat.
Yeah, I think that's one thing. Like, I was at every stage of different jobs that I had, it wasn't really by accident. It was because I was like, right, I now want to move on to X. It's important that I get off the shop floor. It's important that I have a higher paying job. It's like, I think you have to be quite diligent in regards to that. If that is something you want to do, you don't want to be moving your whole life on the shop floor.
Okay, cool. So then after the shop floor, what was next?
Then I moved to a role for an online retailer of luxury fashion. I tried to be descriptive without saying the name. And it was, I worked in customer care. So it was like taking care of customers' orders and, or customers' orders and their queries. Mm. And that felt like quite a big deal to me because, again, it was like a really well-known brand and website. And it was like, finally, I don't have to be on the shop floor. But
you still had the nuisance of customers.
Oh, they were really bad, actually. Mm. They were really bad. So essentially, it was like a call center. And anyone who's done that sort of job knows that you have like targets and number of calls you, and queries you need to deal with daily, or emails. The job was like, don't get me wrong, I learned a lot. And if I didn't have that job, I wouldn't have moved on to other things, yeah, better things. But I remember we used to have this one customer, and she was Greek. And she was notorious. And she used to call us just to ask us like basic things like the sizing and how the size comes up. Bearing in mind,
it's on the website.
It's on the website. But we have thousands of items, okay? And even though our office was located at one of the warehousing sites, we don't sit in the office with like Diane von Furstenberg dresses just hanging up, yeah? Like, we've never seen these garments either. We can just go off of the notes and information we have on the back end of things, you know? So we're guessing and we're giving you our best, you know, guess.
Guesstimate, yeah.
She used to call up and she was like a professor. Like, she was, she wasn't like...
You'd expect better, basically.
You'd expect better, and you think to yourself, oh my God, I feel sorry for her students.
Yeah.
But she was Greek, and she used to call and ask about sizing or something like that, and you used to just be honest, but, you know, you can always free returns if it's not for you, blah, blah, blah. And she used to scream at us on the phone, like scream. It was like she was having a heart attack down the phone. She was screaming so much. And you had to tell her, like, listen, I'm not gonna accept this sort of, you know, someone to talk to me like this. And it would just get her riled up even more.
Madam, this is really inappropriate behaviour.
Honest to God. But it
Calm down. I'm really sorry you're experiencing it.
The thing is with retail is that, especially luxury fashion, is that your customers can be these sorts of, you know, characters.
Yeah, the higher the price, like, I don't know. I just, if some, first of all, like, a Zara return is the worst, right? But if there's something wrong with my product, I don't care. And it's not like it's Zara's, like, it just goes there and it's fine. You get to queue and you might be a bit annoyed about it. But when you're paying a lot of money for something, you have an entitlement for one. But also, if you are someone who can even afford to spend a lot of money on stuff, you have an air about you, or you have,
you're living in a different like level of service.
And you're just kind of like, I expect a high standard in life.
But then the brands encourage that because they're very accommodating.
They want to give you that customer experience,
and
they want to look after their gold VIP. And obviously, if she's shopping on there a lot, calling a lot, and you know of her, she's spending a lot of money on your website.
Well, I don't think, honestly, she was one of those customers who, she buys stuff, but she's not enough to warrant all of this. It's free to call customer service and chat shit, isn't it? Like, so, but yeah, like, I remember also this company, and I learned a lot about what you can get away with, like, in terms of luxury fashion. So, for example, if you ordered something and it had not yet been dispatched,
you told me this.
It's not yet been dispatched, but the same item goes on sale in the website, you can call customer service and be like, I haven't yet got my item, but I can see it's 20% cheaper.
Now on sale,
Will you honour that? And they'll be like, yeah. We'd do it all the time. So, yeah. And so I've done that. I've now asked for that sort of thing in the past. And customer service, we don't care. Like, you'll just give it to
it's
them.
Not their money.
And you're allowed to. So, I walked away with a lot of knowledge for brands in that sense.
And then you moved into the merch side of stuff, right?
Yeah. So again, it was like, I was still working like shifts technically. And although it was a better environment, it was like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life, obviously. And being in fashion, as we've mentioned before, it was like being in the office near where, you know, things are happening.
Near the things.
So I then applied for a different job, and it was in allocation, which is essentially making sure that you have a good distribution of sizing, styling in all the stores or on the website, according to what the buyers have envisioned for the collection, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So went to work for a handbag company, and there was an allocator. And yeah, that was a good, it felt like, oh, you know,
a step in the right direction,
exactly. Again, it was like the money was,
you know,
it was like early 20s.
Yeah. And it's fashion. It's fashion.
And don't get me wrong, it was like I'd come from doing longer hours, having like being shouted at, you know, or like having to hunt down people's parcels, yeah. you know, or like calling people while they're at the airport, explaining why their delivery hasn't turned up before their holiday, mm. you know, to being in an office. And it's like, I start the same time every day. Mm. I leave the same time every day. I'm in an office. I can go into the kitchen and make a coffee. And like all those little things and you look back on your experiences and you think, wow, you can really accept the bare minimum.
Yeah. And fashion offers the bare minimum.
Yeah. And yeah. you're like, oh, I finally live a normal a quote-unquote existence.
Normal office existence or working existence, which is what, like, we all believe that's what work is meant to be, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That everyone, you sort of start and finish at the same time every day. Yeah, you can have your lunch breaks. You can go make coffee and tea and no one's going to be like, why aren't you sat at your desk? Like,
yeah.
Every second of the day.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I was in my mid-20s at this point and I was living in East London. So I was obviously like paying rent and my travel monthly card and things like that. And I am a budgeter in that sense.
Mm.
But if I wasn't like a fairly strict budgeter, I mean, easily I would have been in like overdraft and all of that. It's not a survivable amount of money, really. As someone in your mid-20s to live a life with like
when
dignity.
When you want to start trying to enjoy your life. Yeah.
Exactly. And I remember also for the level of job that I had, which is essentially at the time like an entry-level job. Mm. It wasn't, you know, I had two rounds of interviews. My interviews was fine. Okay. And I got to meet who would be my manager and her like superior as well. And they were both really lovely and the interviews were fine. But it felt like a lot of when I look back on it now, like this interview's a bit much for the role that you're that you're advertising.
And what you're paying me. Yeah.
Yeah. And about pay, actually, one thing that I always remember to this day is, you know, when you have to give an idea of the salary that you want, and you'll hear like...
So, as a side note, fashion often doesn't really advertise an amount.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Because if they're, like, A, because it's not enticing.
No.
And
it's not competitive.
Yeah, it's not like industries, like now I work in sort of like a finance industry where it's like you want to show off of like, oh, like we might pay you like 80k for easy job, whereas like fashion will just be like please inquire or like based on experience or something like that.
Yeah.
So you've got no idea then how to pitch that like thing. You like when they
how do you
that,
negotiate,
you have no idea where to pitch it. And because also when you're young and you know fashion's not that like lucrative.
Yeah.
Where is the aim?
Because as you said, they're not advertising a figure, so you don't know. But then also at that point, when you're just like, oh, thank God I got to this next level, I think you get used to expecting the bare minimum and like not really knowing your worth. I don't know if this is just something for the UK, because I think in general the UK pays quite poorly.
Well, I think the UK, we're not the best at being like talking about money, and money conversations aren't great, I would say. But yeah, I don't really know in that respect, because I think every industry is so different in this country.
That's true.
But in fashion, because you get the bend, like you're so grateful for like genuinely a 1 or 2K rise. That is a promotion.
Yes.
That is not just a pay rise. It is a promotion.
I remember.
That is what people in my company get just as a general rise.
Just as a yearly.
Just a yearly add-on.
Percentage.
Salary never changed each year. Did you ever get pay rises? Just annual pay rises?
Okay, so I will go into that actually. So, but initially, when I was working in customer care, I had a standard rate. And then if we met our sales target, like how much transaction value we made over the phone, then we would get a bonus. And the bonus was like up to £300 a month. And that's a lot of money, you know, at the time, especially. But I was working on a part of a website that was going through a lot of change. So it was like a lot of upheaval. So when they asked me about how much was I expecting, I would take what I was getting paid base plus the bonus, because they were paying us this bonus because we were having like a terrible time. And it was like a lot of upheaval on the division that we were working on. So,
hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So I was like, okay, moving forward, that needs to be my bare minimum of what I move on to. And honestly, it wasn't that much. Again, it was still early 20s. And I remember after getting the job, my manager saying to me, like, I know you weren't getting paid that. Like, it's the way she said it. It wasn't mean or spiteful, but it was just like, yeah, I think you were bluffing that you were making that much money. And I was like, no, I wasn't. Now, obviously, you always add like a few hundred pounds on it.
Yeah.
But a few hundred pounds, it's not
life-changing, is it?
It really isn't. And it was just like, no. And to think that like the figure that I was giving
was deemed
as like too much, or like, are you kidding?
So it's like a known thing that salaries are low in...
It was, yeah. But after a year, we did get a percentage increase.
Wow.
Yeah, we did. But the company I worked for was bigger than the ones that you worked for. It was like more corporate and global. Yeah. So there were a lot more employees and just expectation was different. But it wasn't that much money, really, because we did get bonus as well, which was good, because it was a corporate company.
Yeah, yeah. So got, I know. It's all like mad.
You never experienced this.
Like, what?
So you got bonus, but most of it gets eaten up by tax.
Yep.
Yeah. Because it's taxed at like 40%, something ridiculous, like higher rate tax.
Student loan eats so much of it too. Oh my God. No.
It's not even student loan then. It's student loan now, gets on my nerves. So we used to get bonus, but most of it used to go down the toilet to the tax man. And then we used to get a percentage increase, but it was literally like 2%.
Yeah.
And when you're on nothing, what's 2% of nothing? It's nothing, isn't it?
But 2% of a lot is not much as well, isn't it? Not, like, yeah.
But Yeah, so that was good. It was like the first time when I, another thing about going from retail to being in an office is having a more steady form of payment.
Yeah.
Like steady working, steady hours,
salary,
a salary, yeah.
And a payday and all the rest of it.
Yeah, exactly. And having things like bonus and percentage increase and all of that, it's like a more formalized way of working.
Feel more reliable?
Yeah, it did. And like you could take holiday more flexible. It wasn't like, well, Jess is off on that day.
And check the rota.
Yeah, and then I thought, oh, but we need to have at least three people on the shop floor, and then one person's going to go on lunch, and then you've got to be back from lunch by 4 p.m. And you don't, you no longer have to deal with that sort of thing. It's like, I come in, I do my job to, you know, according to my remit, and yeah, there needs to be a few of us on the team at any given point in the year, but mate, that's
Did you feel like there were enough resources in your team?
When I worked in the office?
Yeah. Like, what, did you feel like you were having to do more than your job role?
No, actually, that's the reason why I moved on from this role. I was there for a couple years. And as I mentioned, in allocation, it's like a, it's an entry-level job, which is what I was looking for at the time. But it became boring and redundant.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could do more and get paid more. Like, I don't mind having a higher workload because this is boring and I can do this in 10 minutes. So that's an opportunity for me to actually make a decent amount of money, hopefully. So I thought, like, okay, started applying for something else, and I wanted to go more into, like, buying because it based on my skills that I'd acquired, it made sense.
Yeah.
And I was really lucky because a friend I had at work, she was a buyer, and she helped me with my application, you know, salute to her. And again, like, this new role that I ended up getting, I think I had 3 interviews.
Yeah, you did.
And I had a project, like a piece of work that I had to do.
And we're definitely doing a whole episode on the interview process.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this basically leads us on to why you left fashion.
Yeah.
So it was through no choice of your own.
Okay, so context. End of 2019, and I'd been looking for a job, and I, December, literally, I was doing these interviews, really long-winded, but I really wanted this job, and I was putting in the work and whatnot.
And it was a good job.
Yeah, it was. And it felt like, oh my God, a big fucking deal to me.
Yeah.
Again, the pay was only like, and I had to negotiate.
Yeah.
It was still like, I think it was about 26K. And I think I asked for 26, 25, 26 or something like that. And
3 rounds of interviews.
Yeah.
And that's what you're like, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember I had to negotiate for that. And getting more than that. Okay, full disclosure, it was an assistant buying position.
Yeah.
For a very well-known brand. Yeah. And they were going to pay me 26K a year. Yeah. And it was just like,
it's not a bad fashion salary.
Oh my God. Like, when you think of
By the buyers, way, that is the entry level that we pay at my work.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
In finance, even that I would think maybe a bit low. For someone who's
with
like
no experience.
No
experience.
Okay.
Yeah. We train them.
Oh, okay. So there you go. You get trained.
Yeah.
To be in finance,
that's
great because the training itself is worth easily like 10 grand or something, probably. So when you think of fashion, you think of designers and you think of buyers because they're like the people who get invited to shows and who are like crucial to like the fashion industry. Buyers, essentially, depending on what sort of company you work for, you can have buyers for a department store who's buying collections from runways and whatnot to hold in their store. But you can have buyers who, for particular regions, say you work for a brand and you work for Europe, you're the Europe buyer, you're not going to have, or you're not going to stock the whole collection that maybe the States has.
Yeah.
So a buyer in that instance is someone who is curating the collection for your region, and you have to take into account how it's going to sell, how much stock you're going to shift.
The sizing differences. The distribution.
Yeah. What also is going to make for a cohesive collection in the store. Because mm-hmm. you know you're not going to sell everything,
yeah.
but you might have to stock stuff that you...
For the shop window just for the shop window pieces. Yeah.
And just the, so that the designer feels like you're representing the collection appropriately yeah. in yeah. your region. So there's different types of buyers, but still a crucial part of any brand and any company. And context, there was one buyer for menswear, one buyer for womenswear, the buying manager, and that was it
for the whole buying team.
Yeah. This buying team.
So you were going to be assistant buyer to all of them?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there were four people in this team. Many. I think at the time, I think it would have just been three of us, to be honest. Not many people.
It's not many.
So I don't know why the pay was like that.
Well.
But.
And you would have been doing three people's jobs.
Yeah. another thing for context, and I think we touched on in your episode, is that this brand was still privately owned yeah. at the time. So a lot of brands which are privately owned struggle, and I think that that is justifiably or not justifiably so, but the reason why you don't get paid a lot,
either they're understaffed or yeah underpaid and understaffed,
really, like underpaid and understaffed. And I think that would have been the scenario
yeah.
where I was going.
Yeah.
So yes, that's what happened there. So yeah, cut to the chase, 2020 comes along that year. And I'd been told that I got the job in January, and I was like really happy about it because it felt like I'd really made it off the shop floor, or I'd like really like stepped into career, because up until that point I didn't really think I had yeah. a career. I just had a job that I was doing, and until like the next
mm-hmm.
best thing came along. And I think what happened over the course of the next few months really goes to show like how precarious the industry mm-hmm. is, and how, yeah, there's how dodgy it can get. So I had a 2 month notice period. I had a 2 month notice period for a allocation role. Fair enough. They have to backfill positions. So it was the first time that I had a notice period that long. So obviously I worked it, but then it was March by that time and we were in lockdown, and I was literally in my last, I think I was in my last month of my notice period. It was mid-April that I was gonna officially be moving on to my next role. And at the beginning of lockdown, none of us knew like how long we're gonna be at home for. You know, we were just thinking a few weeks. We had no idea, it would go on for months. And so I was keeping like really close contact with my new manager. And I thought that they would send me like a laptop and stuff so I could onboard from home. I can see the look in your face.
No, but I'm trying to think for context. When did furlough start? Because I feel like this furlough was quite an important element that you basically at one point you had obviously left your job.
Yep.
And had... waiting to start.
Yeah.
And they were sort of delaying it because there was a work from home thing, and then yeah. furlough happened as yeah. well.
So I'll explain that. Yeah. Because
I think that's quite an important element.
Yes. So at the time.
So because didn't they were pushing back your start date until yeah. basically work from home wasn't work from home, because work from home is not ideal for fashion.
Yeah. So they were saying, okay, let's give it a couple weeks. And when we're all back in the office, then it'll be easier and we can get going like normal and stuff. And it was like, cool. And I was biding my time and being really patient.
Yeah. But you were not yet an employee or being paid.
No, but I'd signed my contract and everything.
Yeah. Contracts mean nothing.
Contracts mean nothing, guys. And I learned that the hard way. A second rule I also learned is if you can minimize your notice period, do negotiate it down.
Yeah.
Say, I'd like to leave a month early or something, because it's of no benefit to you to still be in the other role if you can start your new role quicker. So I actually went back to my former employer, the one that I was kind of still employed with, because it was like the end of my job was like coming to an end. And I spoke to HR and I said, you know, it's a new thing called furlough is happening. And at the time, the UK government had basically said, use the furlough as a way to retain staff. Like, if you can, keep them.
Rather than laying them off.
Yeah. Instead of sacking them, we'll pay 80% of their salary. You don't have to contribute that additional 20%. Just keep them on your books and keep them employed and stuff. And I asked that from my employer. I said, rehire me for the sake of furlough. And they basically got back to me and said they wouldn't, even though it would have been no financial disadvantage for them. They wouldn't. I thought, I've been here for 2 years and I know everyone in the office.
They will never show the loyalty that you show them.
Yeah. Like, and I thought, you're not even paid. I'm not asking you to pay me.
Yeah.
So
I actually do think it costs them something in terms of
national insurance or something.
Yeah, it did cost them like PAYE and NI still, but still, like, that's still not much.
I had literally, at that point, I just left, you know.
And your new job wouldn't do that for you either.
My new job couldn't, actually, because I'd never started. I hadn't started with them yet or something.
If you sign a contract.
If I'd start a contract and I had a start date, I would have thought that there's something they could have done for me. And this is the thing with fashion. It's like, I later found out that my former employer, who wouldn't want to bring me on simply for furlough, had started reviewing people they were going to let go. So they knew that they, and I'm pretty sure she even told me, like, they're having to look at employee structure and stuff. So I knew at that point that they were thinking about letting other people go. I just happened to be someone who was moving on anyway, so they didn't want to like carry dead weight, essentially. It was like, oh, one person we didn't have to fire, someone who was going to leave anyway. So that was definitely a time when brands were treating it as an opportunity to slim down their workforce. And it was just an excuse really to get rid of people.
Yeah.
Because remember at that time, people were still shopping. At the beginning of lockdown and furlough, people were home, had more money to spend because they weren't commuting. And we didn't know we were going to be in lockdown for that long. So people were still buying fashion. And I'm pretty sure we had episodes right at the beginning of our podcast. It's like people finally were able to spend more money on higher ticket items in fashion, luxury fashion, than they were able to before. And so sales, particularly at the brand that I was working at, they had a little bit of a renaissance and they became really popular on social media over that summer. And they had like an it bag for a little bit of a, you know, period of time. So they were like, they were selling really well, this particular bag that we'd started selling before, like when I was still employed with them. It was just an opportunity to get rid of people, really. And that's how I viewed it. My new employer kept stringing me along, essentially, at this point. They were like, give it a month, give it a month. And obviously, like, this to me is like the job that I'd like done a project on, three interviews.
It's the biggest job of your life. Like at that point, you're thinking you're getting on your fashion career ladder.
Yeah.
And also because of how hard it is then to get the job.
Yeah.
You don't, I think this is like, is it a strategy? Who knows? But because you're so grateful and you've had to get three interviews to get this job, you also then don't feel like you've got the power in any way, shape or form to like, guys, come on, like, where do I stand?
Yeah.
You are so grateful to have the job. And this is part of the issue, I think, with fashion and putting jobs on a pedestal, but that is the environment they sort of create. Is that like in another realm, you'd be like, where do I stand with this?
Yeah.
But because jobs are so hard to get, they're so hard to come by.
Yeah.
They make you jump through hoops and whatever.
Yeah.
You don't feel like then you can kind of
yeah,
like advocate asking for yourself. Your rights.
Yeah, and I mean,
and then also you're in a limbo of like, well, I'm not being paid now.
Yeah,
how like how much longer am I going to have? Like, should I be looking for a different? Like, yeah,
yeah. So it was. I was never really given a clear answer. It got to the point where I had to say to myself, I don't think this is going to happen, for my own self-preservation.
Yeah.
And obviously I was like really disappointed.
Yeah.
A, by the way things turned out, but also because of the way how I was handled. Yeah, honestly, everyone knew, both sides knew that I didn't have a job. They knew that I didn't have a job and yeah. I was waiting. I needed to get paid from them starting. And I was on Universal Credit. I was holding out for that job, but then it was also like, I will just take this time. It was really sunny. It was really
it was a great summer.
It was like, you know what? I'm privileged, and although it was really tough, I was able
to make do.
To make do and kind of bide my time. I wasn't going anywhere. I didn't have big overheads. I was like, let me just wait and see how this kind of like pans out. So of course I was going to wait and see.
How long did it take for them to confirm to you that there was not a job to go to?
In total, I was unemployed for 9 months.
No, but,
but yeah. So then, from the April, I think it was about 5 months. Yeah. It was a while. And again, it wasn't them saying it wasn't this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
It was like, come on guys, like what's the situation?
And them saying, and they can't promise anything.
Yeah, 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 yeah. They can't promise. Let's, you know, maybe in the future. I was like, give me a break. Give me a break. Because all this time, you guys have also clocked on to the fact that you can do this job with just two people on the team. You know, you've got one buying manager and one buyer, and that's it. And you, I guess, seem to think that you've survived thus far. So, yeah. So then I decided, like, after that didn't go anywhere, I decided, okay, I think I need to just like, again, take the skills that I have and try to pivot into a different industry and see if like I can just get paid more to do something similar.
And was that also because of realizing that fashion's maybe not the most reliable, like, or was it mainly about pay and it's like, or, and that kind of a thing? Or was it like, oh, right, fashion's kind of not a great industry?
Primarily, it was more like, I can't just stick to fashion because this is a really
narrowing.
Yeah, it's like narrowing my search and my options, and this is not the time to be
reliable industry. Yeah.
And then,
especially when you're applying for jobs in a pandemic where like fashion and beauty brands were like being hit the worst.
Yeah, there were no shows, there weren't many occasions to wear these clothes. Yeah. So I didn't want to narrow down my search because at that point it was like, I actually do need a job, just a job. I need a job. Like I cannot survive with Universal Credit, which is terrible. It's like in the UK, it's horrendous. If you have any semblance of savings, you're not like eligible for anything. Yeah. So then I ended up getting a contract job, which by just... I don't want to say luck because obviously I interviewed and I like
earned it.
I like earned it and I applied for it and I worked and interviewed and all of that. But luckily I got a contract that paid me significantly more. And then it was like a light bulb moment. And it was like,
why would I ever go back?
I don't think I can go back because it's like you can take your same skills and have something that's more reliable, and you gain, I think from that whole experience, you gain an idea of like, I know I can advocate for myself now. Someone's paid me X amount to do this job, so why I don't need to accept anything less.
Just because you think you're fancy, like you think it's like a wonderful thing to be able to say I've worked for you.
That's
not enough now.
Exactly. So it was kind of like I got pushed out.
Yeah.
But then my whole perspective on how I treat work, my aspirations for moving forward, what sort of job do I want, what sort of pay do I want, what sort of conditions and all of that, I like my perspective changed completely that is how I ended up leaving fashion. Yeah.
it was completely different to yours.
No, yeah. But it's interesting, but also you were forced out. Like, I chose to leave. Mm-hmm. You were forced out. This sounds like a really dramatic way of, like,
talking. At the time, it felt very dramatic, though.
But the interesting thing is that it's, well, it's, like, for the better. Like, that it's, that you've made your peace with that. Like, I had obviously made my peace with it because, like, it was a decision. Yeah. Whereas you didn't get to make that decision. But actually, it's interesting that you've, like,
yeah, you have to, though, like...
No, but also, like, it's not even like, oh, because I have to move on. It's also like, yeah, I actually want something better than what you could offer me.
Yeah, definitely. So, that is the story of how I left fashion, got pushed out, got, you know.
You know what it makes me think of when Oprah was like, were you, like...
Oh, yeah. Was it like, were you... I don't know. What did she say?
I don't know what the first one is.
Were you silenced? I was silenced.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully this has been really insightful for people of how, I think we had similar experiences, but in different scenarios.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, now that we finished both of our episodes, it's kind of sad to see that, like, ultimately you are better off not being in fashion. It sounds so bad, but it's not sustainable. Yeah. But like normal working people, it kind of isn't sustainable. And yeah, I think more people need to be honest about the real implications of working in fashion, regardless of your role in your department.
That's so true. But I think that's the case with anything, that like there are certain people where like you actually will be like, oh, you do enjoy what you do? Or like, especially people I've met with design jobs, like, God, is it all right? I find fashion like horrible. And like, yeah, it's fine. And then you delve deeper and then you're like, oh no, that's horrible too, isn't it? Yeah, you don't get to go home on time and you can't make your plans and whatever.
You see, but people
don't
thread.
Want to like admit it necessarily, and they probably should.
Yeah. Once you start talking about it, you realise there's commonalities, and like now I care less about being passionate about my job.
Yeah.
As long as I'm like, I can do it and I feel like I can do it to a good enough standard, that's all that matters to me.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
Thank you again for listening. You can follow us on all the socials. So we're on Instagram at Style Over Substance Pod. We are on
our link trees on Instagram.
Yeah, our link tree, and we have everything there. Obviously, we're here on YouTube for everyone who's listening over on your podcast player apps. We're also on YouTube, so you can see our face if you want to see our ugly mugs. we are on all the podcast listening platforms, so Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all of them. And if you have any suggestions, topics you want us to cover, because we don't just do story times, we do... we take on like larger topics and discuss the industry at large. So if you have any topics you want us to discuss or guests you want us to have on, because we also have guests, email us at styleoversubstancepodcast@gmail.com and we'll get back to you. But yeah, we have episodes every Tuesday. So we'll see you next week, guys.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.